Morning. Today's daf in Gittin is Nandalid. Thank Blue Pen Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is on the Zechon Nishmas Liba Gabriel Bashmuel. In the middle of the fifth parak of Gittin, started yesterday the discussion of Hezek Sheino Nikar. I damaged somebody, but the damage that I've done is not discernible. I cannot tell that I damaged it, and most of the time this is resulting in a halachic damage. So, for example, the Mishnah gave three separate examples. Let's say somebody has truma, and I'm a time of the truma. Somebody has truma or chulin, and I mix it together with truma. Or he has wine, and either I mix the wine together with the Yayin Nesach, or I actually turn the wine into Yayin Nesach. That was machlokes yesterday between Rav and Shmuel, exactly how to understand that. But in other words, I made a halachic difference so that your produce was and your wine was at one value, and because of the halachic damage that I've done, so now it's either significantly reduced in value or the value is brought down to zero. So these are examples of Hezek Sheino Nikar. So the Mishnah's basic rule is that if I did it b'mezid, I have to pay. If I did it b'shogig, if I did it inadvertently, so then I do not have to pay. And then what we touched on yesterday, really the synopsis of yesterday's daf, is really the fundamental question, which is the Torah demanding that I pay or the Torah demand that I not pay for Hezek Sheino Nikar? Because we know that whenever we're dealing with the world of Hezek, Nezikin, so a person is liable for any damage that he does, and it does not matter whether it was done intentionally or unintentionally. If I back up into somebody accidentally, it was a perfect accident, doesn't matter. Yeah, I have to pay for the damages that I've done. So here, what difference would it make if it's mezid or shogeg? And if the Torah fundamentally obligates me to do so then I would always have to pay. And if the Torah doesn't fundamentally obligate me to do so then I never have to pay. So how do you understand the Mishnah? So this yesterday represented a machlokas between Rav Yochanan and Chizkiah in terms of whether the Torah fundamentally requires to payment or not. Chizkiah was of the opinion that fundamentally, Hezek Sheino Nikar Shmei Hezek, it is considered damages, and therefore I would have to pay under all circumstances. Why do I get a pass on Shogeg? So Chizkiah gives a svara. Well, if he did it b'Shogeg, we want him to come forward and admit what he did wrong. Because nobody sees the damage that was done. Nobody knows that the Truma was Tameh, that Truma became Tameya. Only he's the one who knows. So if we give him a pass on payment, so he'll probably then step forward and admit, look, I'm really sorry, here's what I did, I apologize. But if we're going to have him pay, so that really will inhibit him from admitting what he did wrong. Rav Yochanan, on the other hand, says no. Hezek Sheino Nikar, lo shmei Hezek. Rabbi Yochanan is of the opinion that fundamentally you are not obligated. The only kind of nezek that the Torah requires payment for is physical damage that is discernible. But once the damage is not apparent to the eye, it's a halachic damage that was done. But you can't see the difference. You can't see any difference before and after. So then the Torah doesn't require you to pay for nezikin. So that is Rav Yochanan's position, which of course then begs the question. So if that's true, then why do I have to pay if I did a b'mezid? If I did all these types of halachic damages b'mezid? So the answer is very simple. Kenas. In other words, mi'ikar adin, you don't have to pay. You're certain there's no compensatory damages that you need to pay for. But the Chachamim don't want society to operate in a way in which I halachically damage your produce. I don't have to pay. People are going to run around and start creating halachic damage when there's no repercussions for doing so. So Rav Yochanan's response is, or his understanding of the Mishnah is, the Chachamim imposed a kenas so that people wouldn't do it. The kenas is only going to be in the context of mezid, not in the context of shogeg. That is yesterday's daf in a nutshell. After back and forth and quoting a number of Mishayos, the Gemara ended off by saying Tiyufta on Chizkiah. Chizkiah's position from the perspective of various Mishnayos is difficult, if not impossible, to defend, which means that the Gemara halachically adopts the opinion of Rav Yochanan, that Hezek Sheino Nikar, lo Shmei Hezek. This is where we got to yesterday, and we are continuing now in the Gemara on Nun Gimel Mid Beis, Lema Kitanai. Lema Kitanai is about a quarter of the way down. It's the first word in the line, is Lema Kitanai. And now the Gemara is going to say that maybe this machlokas between Rav Yochanan and Chizkiah is really a machlokas Tanayim. Now, of course, it's interesting that immediately after the Gemara says Tiyufta, meaning we basically refuted the position of Chizkiah, the Gemara now is kind of going to try to resurrect this machlokas and present as a machlokas Tanayim. So that's interesting in of itself. But anyway, the Gemara is going to attempt to do this. Lema Kitanai. So now, let us now suggest Chizkiah and Rav Yochanan really are representing a machlokas exist, that already existed amongst the Tanaim. If somebody either does any one of these halachic damages to somebody else, so according to Rav Meir, doesn't matter if it was done by Mezid, doesn't matter if it was done by Shogi, you're going to be chayiv. Obviously, our Mishnah is not reflecting the opinion of Rav Meir. Normally, anonymous Mishnayos do reflect the opinion of Rav Meir. Obviously, not here. Rabbi Yehuda Amar b'Shogeg Pater b'Mezid Chayev, and Rabbi Yehuda says that if it's done b'Shogeg, you're going to be exempt. If it's done b'Mezid, you're going to be obligated. In other words, Rabbi Yehuda is reflecting the opinion that we saw together in our Mishnah. Now, my love, hakemifli. The Gemara says, what's really at the issue over here? So the Gemara says, could very well be that the machlokis between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda is predicated on the machlokis between Rabbi Yochanan and Chizkiah. Mar Sav Hezek Sheinu Nikar Shmei Hezek, or Mar Sav Lo Shmei Hezek. If you hold that fundamentally you are obligated, so then that would reflect the opinion of Rabbi Meir. In other words, we'll line Rabbi Meir up with the opinion of Chizkiah. And therefore, you'd be chayv under all circumstances. Masha Ein Kain, according to Rav Yochanan, the shita of Rav Yehuda is going to be reflective of the opinion of Rav Yochanan, that fundamentally you're not obligated. Why do you have to pay if you do a b'mezid? Again, that's a kenas. So Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak Dukolei Amar Hezek Sheinu Nikar Lo Shmei Hezek. So the Gemara says no. Really, the author of this brisa is of the opinion that Hezek Sheinu Nikar is not considered Hezek. V'hacha b'katzu shogegat b'mezid k'miflgein over here. It's just a question of, look, there's a kenas in the case of Mezid. Is there going to also be a kenas in Shogeg as well? Because, look, if we don't find Shogeg, so then the next step is that inadvertently I don't have to pay. Well, I'll do it intentionally as well. So maybe we should make a kenas also in Shogeg as well. So this is a machlok, is my server kansu Shogeg atu Mezid, no my server lo kansu Shogeg atu Mezid. Period. So the Gemara says that this machlokus tanaim is not necessarily reflective of the machlokus between Rav Yochanan and Chizkiah. Rami de Rav Meir, de Rav Meir, Rami de Rav Yehuda, de Rav Yehuda. The Gemara now is going to point out that it seems to be that we have inconsistencies within the Shitas. Where we stand right now, that according to Rabbi Meir of the Brisa that we just quoted, he says that if I do any one of these halachic damages, metame, menasech, medamea, so then I'm going to be obligated under all circumstances, both in Shogeg and Mezid. Why? Because Rav Meir is of the position that we're going to constant Shogeg out to Mezid. And Rav Yehuda, on the other hand, says, no, we'll give a kenas by Mezid, but we will not give a kenas of Shogeg to Mezid. Gemara points out, now that we've presented the machlokas in this format, we have an inconsistency. And between both Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda, did Tanya, the Gemara here is going to quote a Brisa. This Brisa comes up a number of times throughout Shas. You can see the side of the Gemara. Baba Kama, Chulan, Beitza, Trum, wow, comes up a lot. Trumas Ksuvas. Okay. Anyway, the Brisa over here discusses the issue of Maaser Shabbos. What's Maaser Shabbos? Maaser Shabbos means that somebody, we're gonna talk about it in the context of Bishul B'Shabbos, but the truth of the matter is, it would be true by any malacha. I had a Jew do a malacha on Shabbos. Okay, obviously he shouldn't have done that. But a Jew did a malacha on Shabbos, and can I benefit from the malacha that he has done? This is referred to as Maaser Shabbos. And If you've seen this before and you know what's coming up, that's great. It's a three-way machlokas in terms of what of how we should treat the chilul Shabbos that he did. Meaning, not him. We're not talking about he himself. That's its own set of laws. But we're talking about the item, the food that he cooked on Shabbos. Can I eat the food? Can I not eat the food? So, three opinions. So, first we start off with the opinion of Rav Meir. Rav Meir says, if it was on b'shogeg, meaning he woke up in the morning, he forgot it was Shabbos, he thought it was Sunday morning. Okay, it was just a little disoriented as he woke up, and he cooked a beautiful breakfast, and then after doing so, he remembered, oh no, today's Shabbos. So, Rabbi Meir's of the opinion, if he did so b'shogeg, okay, so you can eat the breakfast, even though he did it on Shabbos. It was shogeg, and if he did it b'mezid, so then lo yochel, so then you're not allowed to eat it. Ad kan divrei Rabbi Meir. Now, I can pause right here. You already see the difference between, the stira between Rabbi Meir over here and the Rabbi Meir previously. Rabbi Meir Meir said, we're going to make a kanas by shogeg and mazid. Here, Rameir is only making the kanas by mazid, not by shogeg. So already you see that there's a problem within Rameir. Let's keep reading on. Rav Yehuda Amar b'shogeg yochal lamotzei Shabbos. Rav Yehuda's of the opinion that if I cook on Shabbos b'shogeg, so then I can eat it, but only after Shabbos is over. And Rashi inserts over here, you also have to wait the amount of time b'bichtei shiasu, the amount of time that it took to cook it. B'mezid lo yalchan, if it was done b'mezid, you're not allowed to eat it at all. Lo yochal olamis, you're not allowed to eat it ever. And then we have the third sheet over here, which for our purposes in this Gemara, we'll learn it and hopefully we'll remember it, but it's not germane to our discussion. Rav Yochanan Hassan La'omer B'shogeg Yochla Motzei Shabbos La'chem V'lo Lo. Rav Yochanan says that if it was done B'shogeg, so you can only eat it after Shabbos and not by the cooker himself, even though he only did it B'shogeg. Only other people can eat it after Shabbos. B'mezid Lo Yochla La'mis V'lo Lo V'lo La'cherim. And then if it was done B'mezid, nobody can ever eat it. The Gemara elsewhere, when quoting the opinion of Rav Yochanan Sandler, brings a pasuk that states this position. It sounds like from other Gemaras that Rav Yochanan Sandler treats the food as asur min haTorah. Either way, again, for our purposes, Rav Yochanan Sandler is not germane to our discussion. Kasha de Rameir, de Rameir, Kasha de Rav Yehuda, ad de Rav Yehuda. So here's the problem, the inconsistencies. Rameir previously said, we're going to make a knas both by shogeg and by mezid. And why are you going to make a knas by shogeg? Shogeg to mezid. And here, in this Brisa regarding Bishop Shabbos, Rav Meir says, no, we're only going to make a knas by mezid, not by shogeg. That's an inconsistency by Rav Meir. And by Rav Yehuda, once again, there's another inconsistency. Previously, Rav Yehuda said, the knas is only on shogeg when I do hezek shein or nikker. Sorry, let me say it correctly. The knas is only on mezid by hezek shein or nikker. But here, in Bishop Shabbos, so there's a knas both by shogeg and by mezid as well. So what we have over here is an inconsistency on both tanaim. Derabbi Meir, ad Derabbi Meir lokasha ki kanas b'derabbanan b'deraisa lokanas. So the Gemara says, well, maybe for Rabbi Meir we can make the following distinction. For Rabbi Meir, when the Chachamim make a kanas, that's only by derabbanan, but they don't make a kanas, a double kanas on a deraisa. Okay, it runs a little bit counterintuitive, but it's not so hard to understand. Meaning by derabbanan's asu chizik ledivrehem, the chachamim, once they legislate, they have to fortify their legislation. So therefore, like the cases of our Mishnah here in Gittin, of menasech medamea, so what are you doing? You're doing hezek shein or nikar. Hezek shein or nikar, again, we're taking the fundamental position of Rav Yochanan. It's not considered hezek. So really you haven't damaged. So you're going to pay, but that is a din derabbanan that you have to pay. So it's a din derabbanan you have to pay. So there, to fortify their position, they're going to make a kanas both on shogeg and on mezid. Masha Enkin, Bishop of Shabbos. Bishop of Shabbos is a deraisa. So here, the Chachamim don't have to make such a kanas to refrain from people cooking on Shabbos. People know you're not allowed to cook on Shabbos. All right, this person did it b'mezid, fine, kanas. But if a person did it b'shogeg, and we're talking about an Issa deraisa, there's no need to make a kanas. That is the Gemara's approach towards Rav Meir. V'hamenasech deraisa hi, v'ka kanas. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you, the only problem with this position, this answer, is that one of the examples that was given in our Mishnah is Menasech. Menasech is idolatry. It's an Issa Daraisa. And yet, there's a Knas. So, Mishum Chomer Davos Kochavim Kanas Lei. So, the Gemara says, okay, but we could just simply explain that Avodah Zarah is one of the most heinous Isurim in the Torah. So even though it's an Issa Daraisa, and even though by Isurim Daraisa you only need to consume the mezid, not the shogeg, but the Gemara says for Avodah Zarah, just heap on the knas, both on shogeg and on mezid, because it is in fact Avodah Zarah. Rav Yehuda, Rav Yehuda Lakasha, Kilo Kanis B'Darabanan, B'Daraisa Kanis. So the Gemara says that, and as far as Rav Yehuda is concerned, we're just going to go in the opposite direction. Meaning, we're going to resolve the inconsistency of Rav Yehuda by basically laying out the same distinction, but in the reverse. By Darabanans, there is no need to make a Knas by Mezid and by Shogeg. In other words, to begin with, it's an Issa Darabanan. So the Knas that's imposed is only going to be on the mezid, not on the shogeg. Masha Enkin, when it comes to a din derabanan, to an Issa Daraisa, like Bishop Shabbos, Issa Daraisa Kanas. both on the Shogeg and the Mazid. But the Raisa Kanis, Bahamana Sech, the Raisa Velokanis, here now, in this approach, now the question goes the other way. Well, our Mishnah is Dine de Rabbanan, Isuri de Rabbanan, because again, Hezek Shein Nikar is not considered Hezek. So it's Isuri de Rabbanan, and according to Rav Yehuda, that's why the Kanas is only on Mazid. What about Avodah Zarah? What about Menasech? That's an Issa Daraisa. So the Gemara says, Mishum Chumad Avodah Kochavim, Mivdal Bedile Mine. So the Gemara says, again, it's now the argument, but in the reverse. Avodah Zarah is so heinous that everybody knows to stay away from Avodah Zarah. The Chachamim don't need to impose a Knas by the Shogeg of Avodah Zarah Atu Mezid. Who's going to do idolatry of Mezid? People know how severe and serious a crime it is. Okay, so what we have so far done now is we have addressed seeming inconsistencies between the opinions of Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda, comparing our Mishnah regarding Hezek Shein Nikar and the Braisa of Bishul B'Shabbos, and the Gemara drew a distinction between the two. Our Mishnah is primarily a Derabanan, because Hezek Shein Nikar, Lo Shmei Hezek, and Bishul B'Shabbos is an Issa Daraisa. Okay. Rami de Ramer Bidaraisa Ditanya. The Gemara says, okay, now that we're here, but we can ask now another question based on another Mishnah. You plant on Shabbos. Planting on Shabbos is a malacha. Malacha Shabbos. First malacha on Shabbos. The 39. And I do so bishogeg yikayem. So, obviously, there was a violation of Shabbos, albeit bishogeg. The tree could stay. You could leave the tree up. But if I plant the tree on Shabbos, intentionally, knowing that it's Shabbos, so the kenas is that the tree has to be uprooted. Uvashvi is, now let's say I do this during the Shemitah year. Planting during the Shemitah year is also an Issa Daraisa. Okay, not a capital crime, but it's an Issa Daraisa. Uvashvi is, Bein B'Shogeg, Bein B'Mezid, Ye'aker, Div Rebbe Meir. According to Rebbe Meir, it has to be uprooted. Rebbe Yehuda Om, Rebbe Shvi is, B'Shogeg, Yikayim, B'Mezid, Ye'aker. Rebbe Yehuda says that, when I plant during the Shemitah year, so if it was done B'Shogeg, keep the tree planted. If it was done B'Mezid, uproot the tree. Uvashabbos, Bein B'Shogeg, Bein B'Mezid, Ye'aker. And if it was done on Shabbos, whether it was Bishogig or whether it was Bemezid, it has to be uprooted. What's the problem? Problem is, according to Rav Meir, what did we just learn according to Rav Meir? That previously we said that when it comes to Dina Daraisa, like for example, Bishop of Shabbos, Rav Meir only makes a Knas on Mezid, not on Shogig. That was the case of Bishop of Shabbos. And here in this Braisa, Rav Meir is prepared to make Exera both by Shogeg and by Mezid, at least as it relates to Shemitah. So the Gemara says, okay, before we raise our hands up in the air and say this is a real problem, the Gemara says we don't even need comparison shopping to realize there's a problem. Meaning, stay right here in the Braisa, and in the Braisa itself, you realize that there's a problem. In this Braisa we just quoted, we just compared planting on Shabbos and planting during the Shemitah year. They're both Isuri D'Araisa. I understand one's a capital crime, the other isn't, but they're both Isuri D'Araisa. Maishna Shabbos and Maishna Shvius. So even within the Braisa itself, by Shabbos, if you plant on Shabbos, Bishogeg, it's okay. This is all according to Rav Meir. Okay, meaning you can keep the tree in the ground. If you do so during the Shemitah year, it has to be uprooted. Sorry. If you do so, B'mezid, it has to be uprooted. And then, the same Rebbe Meir says that this was done during Shemitah, if you plant a tree during the Shemitah year, you always have to uproot it. Before we go anywhere else and compare this Braisa to anything else, you realize in the Braisa itself, I don't know what the difference is. Allah hasam kediktani time amar Rebbe Meir mimnei ma ani omer. B'Shabbos b'shogi yikayim b'mezid yakir. U'v'shvi'z b'shogi b'mezid yakir. So the Gemara then quotes a Braisa, and this Braisa gives us the explanation. Mimneshi Yisrael monim l'shvius ve'in monim l'shabbosos. So the Gemara says, here is Svara number one. Why make a distinction between planting a tree on Shabbos versus planting a tree during the Shemitah year? So answer number one goes like this. I planted a tree on Shabbos. Again, we're talking about Bishogeg. I did it inadvertently. Okay, I woke up in the morning, I thought it was Sunday morning. Okay, I'm going to do my gardening on Sunday morning. I planted a tree, and then lo and behold, totally disoriented, it wasn't Sunday, it was in fact Shabbos. It was done Bishogeg. So again, Ramer Shita is, it could stay in the ground. You don't have to uproot it. Masha Ein Kein, if I plant during the Shemitah year, so now I have to uproot it, and it doesn't matter, Shogeg Mezid. Svar number one is, because we know that whenever you plant a tree, you have to know what year the tree was planted. Why is it necessary to know? Because there are halachas of arla, kerem revai, nitta revai. In other words, every time the tree is planted, right, can I eat the fruit from that tree? Well, it depends. Is it year one? Is it year two? Is it year three? The answer is no. Is it year four? The answer is going to be, it has to, there needs to be a pigeon. Year five, totally fine. So in other words, every time I plant a tree, I'm reminding myself when it was planted, which year it was planted. So now, if the tree was planted even b'shogeg, inadvertently, someone planted the tree during the Shemitah year, we're always going to be reminded that that tree was planted during the Shemitah year. Years 1, 2, 3, and 4, we're going to keep reminding each other that the tree was planted during the Shemitah year. Masha Enkein, if the tree was planted b'shogeg on Shabbos, who's going to remember? In other words, there's no significance in a tree being planted on Shabbos as opposed to Sunday agriculturally. Meaning for all the agricultural halachas, who's going to remember?
Dated back.
So that shogeg is like a
mitzvah. It's just, I wouldn't say it that way. I just simply say that we're going to keep reminding ourselves that that tree was planted during the Shemitah year. And it's, you know, it's a disgrace, this idea. So that's one svara. Dava achar, the Gemara says, and I'll give you another svara. Nechshu du Yisrael al shvi'is v'lo nechshu du al shabbosos. And also, when it comes to Shabbos, look, we're all careful about Shabbos. To various degrees, but we're all generally aware of Shabbos. So if we keep this tree in the ground that was planted b'shogeg, no one's gonna nudge each other and say, hey, you know what? Shabbos is not such a big deal. No, Shabbos is a big deal, and we all know it. But the Gemara says, as far as Remeir is concerned, Shemitah is not as big a deal. Even though it's in the Torah, it's in Issa D'Oraisa, but people are not as careful with Shemitah. And if we allow a tree, albeit it was planted b'shogeg, if we let it stand on the ground, so then people will become extraordinarily lax in their observance of Shemitah. That's a second svara. Now the Gemara says, "My davar acher." Now, why did we need the second svara? First svara was excellent. So hachi kamer v'chitem b'shabbos namizimim demikle yom lamed b'shabbos yinata hu yuma hu desakale shasa v'ilo lo sakale shasa. So the Gemara says, if it was just for svara number one, even Shabbos becomes an issue. And I'll tell you why, says the Gemara. We know that in order for a year to be considered, in order for a tree to be considered to have been planted in the ground for 1 year, it doesn't need to experience a full 365-day year, or on the lunar calendar, 354-day year. We know that in the halachas of counting a year, the tree needs to be planted in the ground for 30 days, a minimum of 30 days. So therefore, in order for the tree to be counted year one, it had to have been planted in the ground for at least 30 days prior to the end of the year, meaning the first day of Elul. Right? Yeah, right. Okay. So so now that's true, so sometimes when we plant the tree in the ground, not only are we going to go back to what year was planted, but sometimes we're even going to go back to what day was planted. Because if we're really straddling on the border of, was this planted on 30 or 29 days before the year was over? So now we're all going to open up our calendars, and we're going to say, look, I remember this tree was planted 30 days before the year was over, because I planted on this day. So sometimes, even when looking at the year of the tree, we're going to have to refresh and remind ourselves which day it was planted on. So the Gemara says, so this really, it pokes a hole in the first Svara. Because the first Svara says, no one's going to remember the day. The Gemara says, well, that's not always true. Sometimes, because of this cutoff of day 30 versus day 29, we're going to have to remind ourselves of which day it was planted. So it pokes a hole in the first Svara. So the Gemara says, okay, so that's why we have a second Svara. Okay, Tashma Davach and Nechshu Yisrael Shvis v'lo Nechshu Du Al Hashabbosos. Okay, now Rabbi Yehuda lo kasha. So the Gemara says, now what we have done is we have understood the opinion of Rav Meir better. Meaning, by Daraisas, generally Rav Meir's position is Knas only by Mazid, not by Shogeg. Shemitah is different. Two reasons why Shemitah is different, according to Rav Meir. Now, as far as Rav Yehuda is concerned, lo kasha ba'asur de Rav Yehuda, chamer le shvius. So the Gemara says, now as far as Rav Yehuda is concerned, no problem. Rav Yehuda, when it comes to Shemitah, only makes a knas by mazid, not by shogeg. inconsistent with the Rav Yehuda we learned earlier this morning, that when it comes to Bishul B'Shabbos, which is an Issur D'oraisa, he makes knas both by Mezid and by Shogeg. Gemara says we can resolve his position by saying the following. In the community of Rav Yehuda, people took Shemitah super seriously. How do I know that? Da'ud amale l'chavrei dayer bar dayrata. Because in the community of Rav Yehuda, the following exchange took place. Okay, there's an issur in the Torah called Ona'as Devarim. You're not allowed to verbally abuse somebody. Okay, so I say that because the Gemara we're going to learn is two people exchanging barbs with one another. They're both basically dabbling in Onas Devarim. One says to the other, you are a convert, the son of a convert. How about that? And Amar Leh, so the response is, Ana lo achli per deshvias kavasech. At least I don't eat per shvias like you eat per shvias. Okay, now, obviously, the Gemara is not condoning either comment. Both comments are verbal abuse. But what the Gemara is pointing out is that, right, correct. The biggest insult in this community of Rav Yehuda is, hey, look at you. You don't observe Shemitah the way it properly should be observed. And in Rav Yehuda's community, that was like an insult. Okay, Dashma. Okay, we are continuing again. The Gemara now, after basically establishing Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda in terms of when they make a kenas and when they don't make a kenas, and by Da'araisas, the basic outline is that by Da'araisas, Rav Meir only makes a kenas by Mezid, not by Shogeg. Shemitah being an exception. The Gemara gives two reasons why. By Rav Yehuda, by Nisr Da'araisa, Rav Yehuda makes a gzeira, a kenas, both on Da'araisas and by Darabanans. Shemitah being an exception. The Gemara just gave a reason why. That's the basic outline. Let's continue. We are in Nundala Manalaf Tashma. The Gemara says, come and hear the following. Just before we go forward, just some basic ground rules we need to know in order to appreciate what is going on. If you take a look at Rashi over here, Rashi in the middle of the Amud, where Rashi writes, Mishalim chulin taharin lekam in parech amay mishalim taharin ha'ochel chuma shogig ena mishalim ma'os ela tvua. So first of all, the ground rules in order to appreciate what we're about to discuss. Let's say I eat a kohen's truma, and I do so unintentionally. I forgot it was truma. I forgot that truma can only be by kohen. Whatever I forgot. There was no intent on intentionally eating truma. And I obviously have stolen now from the kohen. I have to make a reimbursement. How is the reimbursement made? So Rashi tells us, Eina mishalim t'maus ela tvua. So here's how the reimbursement is done. If I eat truma, I have to, first of all, not pay back in money, but I have to pay back in food. Two, says Rashi, Eina mishalim truma ela chulin. And the food that I hand to the kohen is not going to be truma, but rather it's going to be chulin. Mitukanim. Obviously, it's going to be corrected, meaning it's produce where the trumas and maisos were already removed. And ayadei tashlumim hein nasin truma. And number three, says Rashi, is that when I hand the kohen this chulin, that is reimbursement for the truma that I ate, what's going to happen is that this chulin immediately will convert into truma. Shenamar, and Rashi says in all this, it's just simply psukim, gzeres akasav. V'nasan l'kohen es hakodesh, ayadei nesin aso, nasa kodesh. By me handing over the kohen, the chulin, it becomes kodesh. Amar davar arui l'chol, alav shem truma be'inan. Now, in order for this to all be effective, I'm obviously going to have to give the kohen a kind of food which can convert, is convertible over to truma. V'lo ma'os, ava ochla meza mishalem ma'os. Now, this is all if I ate truma b'shogeg. However, as Rashi points out at the very end, if I ate truma b'mezid, so then it's just a simple reimbursement of just money. Okay, those are the ground rules. Again, this is based on psukim. Now let's go back and let's see this inside. Tashma, come in here. If I ate truma tamea, I have to pay back with chulim taharim. That's the baseline halacha. Shilem chulim tameim. If, however, I gave the coin back, instead of giving him chulim tahora, I gave the coin chulim tameim. Mahu? Amar simchas mishum Rabbi Meir. So now, in the name of Rabbi Meir, right? Key over here in our discussion. B'shogeg tashlum tashlumim. Mezid in tashlum tashlumim. A distinction is made whether it was done b'shogeg or whether was done b'mezid. V'chachamim marmim echazeh v'echazeh tashlum tashlumim. The Chachamim say in both circumstances, the reimbursement is in fact a reimbursement. And then you have to pay back chulin taharim. So the Gemara says, I don't understand what we just learned. If I do this intentionally, so why isn't your reimbursement not considered reimbursement? The tavala bracha. Why? Because previously, when I ate the truma, I ate something that belonged to the kohen that he himself could only eat in the state of tahara. And what did I do? Kind of helped him out. I gave him something that he can eat, both while he's in a state of tahara or in a state of tumah. So the Gemara says, in order to understand this, we have to insert a missing portion in the Braisa. And it goes like this. If I eat truma tameya, meaning the truma that I ate of the Kohen already was tameh, and I ate it. So now, reimbursement can be anything. However, achal truma tahora. But if what I ate from the Kohen was truma tahora, mishalim chulun taharin. Now I have to pay back the Kohen chulun taharin, as we learned back in the Rashi. Meaning that's just a simple rule of how I make proper reimbursement for eating truma tahora. I got to pay back with chulin. And again, when I hand over the chulin taharin to the Kohen, immediately it elevates to the status of truma. Shilem chulin tameyim mahu. Now, after having eaten truma tahora, and after having paid back the Kohen chulin tameyim, which I should not have done, what becomes of that? So now, in this circumstance, Rav Meir is going to make a distinction between shogeg versus mezid. Shogeg, what's done is done. Mezid, it's not a reimbursement. And the Chachamim say in both circumstances, whatever you gave him, you gave him, but you're going to have to, once again, reimburse him with chulun taharim. So, and what's at the core over here? This is a kanas. And the question is, do we make a kanas of shogeg to mezid? Now, what becomes the problem? We just learned that in this brisa, it's a kanas, and what Rav Meir does is he makes a distinction between shogeg versus mezid. If I do so b'mezid, kanas. If I do so b'shogeg, no kanas. And meanwhile, we learned earlier that according to Rabbi Meir, there is not going to be a knas of shogeg atu. There will be a knas of shogeg atu mezid. So hachi hashta. So the Gemara says once again, the cases are not comparable because hasam garvelushlim kamechavein anam nekum veliknesay. So the Gemara says, look, here it's fundamentally different because yes, the person didn't do the right thing, but his intention was to do the right thing. Meaning, as opposed to previously, where we talked about planting in the ground during the Shemitah. That's an Isser. Here, he was trying to make good. He was trying to make a reimbursement. Granted that he didn't do it correctly, but at least he gets somewhat of a pass because his heart was in the right place. And the Gemara says, and basically what we're going to be hearing from this point going forward is, under a circumstance where a person made a mistake, but while trying to do the right thing, he gets a little bit of a pass. Tashma, the Gemara is going to give a number of examples of this principle. Let's say the blood of a carbon becomes tamei. Now, we know, if you sprinkle dam tmeya on the mizbeach, so it works. We have a concept, what we discussed back in Zvachim, of the tzitz being maratzah, meaning that the big day kahuna, specifically the tzitz, has a koach, has a power to make such a blood acceptable as so that the carbon would serve as the carbon would bring about a kapara. Now, if the tamei blood of the carbon was sprinkled b'shogeg, hurtsa, it creates a ritzui. Meaning, you get a check for having brought the carbon. But if I do so intentionally, it does not bring about a ritzui. So once again, we're bothered by the problem that why are we making the kanas only by mezid, not by shogeg? So once again, the Gemara's answer is same basic answer. Here, he's trying to bring a carbon. Now, granted that once the blood becomes tameh, he shouldn't have sprinkled the blood. But in the larger context of, he's trying to bring a carbon, so he gets a pass if he does a b'shogeg. Tashma hamaisa b'Shabbos b'shag yochal b'meizel lo yochal. Taking off trumas the maisos on Shabbos is an iser derabanan. On Shabbos, if done so inadvertently, it's okay. You can eat it. If done so b'meizel, you cannot eat it. Now, once again, this is Rav Meir. Rav Meir says, by derabanans, you'll make a knas both by shogeg and by mezid. Why over here are we only making a knas by mezid, not by shogeg? Again, the same answer. He's taking off meiser. That's a mitzvah. He's trying to do the right thing. So since he's trying to do the right thing, again, he's doing it on Shabbos, you're not allowed to do. But he's trying to do the right thing, he gets a pass on shogeg, of course not by mezid. Tashma, hamat bo kelim b'Shabbos, if I tovel a kli on Shabbos, once again, it's an iser derabanan to tovel a kli on Shabbos. For the Gemara and Beitza brings down a handful of reasons, but possible reasons. But just for our purposes, we just need to say it simply. It's an iser derabanan to tovel a kli on Shabbos. So b'shogeg yishtamish b'hem, b'mezid lo yishtamish b'hem. If I do a b'shogeg, fine. If I do a b'mezid, no, it's not fine. So once again, why? Why should there be a distinction? Achi Hashto, the Gemara says again the same answer. Hasam gavla tohure mane kamechavin anan lekem maliknase. Because once again, the person is in the mindset of this kli is tamei. I need to make it tahur. I will tovel in the mikvah. He forgot that it was Shabbos. Let's give the guy a pass. He didn't forget it was Shabbos. He knew it was Shabbos. Kenas. Okay. Virami de Rav Yehuda, de Rav Yehuda, be de Rabbanan de Tanya. The Gemara now points out, we're going to show an inconsistency within the sheet of Rav Yehuda. Now remember, on the previous Amud we learned that according to Rav Yehuda, if it's an Isser de Rabbanan, according to Rav Yehuda, so he will only consent a shogeg, but not a mezid. And meanwhile, the Gemara is going to point out what seems to be an inconsistency de Tanya. Gemara quotes the following brisa. We are now on the very top of Nandalman Bay's, just a short word of introduction. Iser and Heter get mixed together, so if it's the simple halacha, I'll keep it really simple. The simple halacha is, as long as I have a majority of Heter over that of Iser, so then there's Bittel. That's a simple halacha. Right? Chad betray Bittel. One simple majority. The only time you need shishim is when there's taste infused from one into the other. But outside of that, if it's a yavish b'yavish, if it's dry foods getting mixed together, a simple majority of two versus one creates bittul. That's a simple halacha. However, we've discussed this time and again throughout Chas, what I would call bittul blocker, where the chachamim blocked bittul for a host of various reasons. One of them being, and we just need to remind ourselves of this gemara, a davar chashav. If it's a significant food, like an entire nut, so which is a significant food, so the chachamim blocked bittul. So that doesn't matter now how much heter was mixed together with the iser. If it's like a whole nut, so then it's a davar chashav, it's a davar shebeminyan, and so therefore the chachamim blocked bittul. And it does not matter what the numbers are, afilu be'elef, even one mixed together with 1,000, there's not going to be any bittul.
Okay.
No, it's not good. It's not good. Bittul blocking means now that once upon a time, right, it would have been totally permitted to eat, and now because of the blocking of bittul, you can't eat it. Right, obviously, right. It creates bittul blockage, creates a loss. That's perfectly correct. So now, now there's another general rule, and that's one basic idea that we need to know. And there's one other general rule, and that is the following: Ein mevat l'nisa lechatchila. Right, I cannot say to myself, you know, I know this hot dog that I purchased in the store is not kosher. It was an accident, but you know what? I'll take this hot dog, I'll mix it with a bunch of kosher hot dogs, I'll confuse it so I won't know the difference, and great, it's fine. You can't do that. You cannot be mevatel iser lechatchila. Now, the simplest way to say it, and really, it's the way that our Gemara seems to be presenting, is that is an iser derabanan. To create bittul lechatchila is an iser derabanan. There is an opinion of the Ravid, I say under my breath, who says it's an iser deraisa. But right now, for our purposes, I'm just going to say it simply. Right, no disrespect, but it's an iser derabanan to do that. With all that stated, now consider the following. If, let's say, I have Naflu, I have Rashi over here says that we're talking about it goes a prach, walnuts, right? Or some sort of nut, and there were whole nuts. One get mixed up with many others. So again, bittul blocking because we're talking about whole nuts. And what do? I take a hammer and I pound them down. So now I broke them into pieces. It's no longer a davar chashuv. So effectively, what I've done is I've created bittul by now breaking up the nuts. Meaning, it's no the bittul blockage is only created by the fact that it was a davar chashuv. Once I break it down, so then I created bittul in doing so. So basically, effectively, what I've done is I was mevatel iser lechatchila. What becomes of that? So Rameir says, I don't care if it was done b'shogig or b'mezid. The bittul will never materialize. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi. I'm sorry. Divrei Rabbi Meir vi Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, comma. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, Amrem b'shogig yalu b'mezid lo yalu. And according to Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon, if it was done b'shogig, inadvertently, fine. Now over here we're talking about bittul blockage, and bittul blockage is an issur derabbanan, and we're talking about mevatel iser lechatchila, which is also derabbanan. So essentially, what we're talking about over here is a violation of issur derabbanan. V'kakanis Rav Yehuda, and Rav Yehuda over here makes a kenas. And previously we had Rav Yehuda set up as by issur derabbanan a kenas only by mezid, not by shogig. Here a kenas both by mezid and shogig. And the Gemara says, but over here, I'll tell you the concern. The concern is, once I know that if it were done, it would effectively be bittul, and I'm sorry, under the circumstance of shogeg, so then I will be extraordinarily tempted to take my hammer, crack all the walnuts down into pieces, create bittul, and just simply say, hey, I did that b'shogeg. So in other words, a person here can easily be enticed to and be involved in a sort of harama. Rami, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yossi, and the Gemara says, and one more wrinkle we need to iron out in order to finish up the sugya, and that is an inconsistency, a seemingly inconsistent Rabbi Yossi. We learned in the Mishnah, Netiyah shel arla v'shel klai kerem shenesarva b'netiyos acheros, a sapling of arla or klai kerem that got mixed up with a bunch of other saplings. In other words, I had an orchard of trees, and by accident, or well, we'll see, accident or on purpose, but a arla tree was planted amongst them. So you shouldn't harvest, but if I harvest, so we know that there is bittul in the world of arla. The ratio is very high, 1 to 200 to create bittul by arla. No, the fruit. In other words, after having harvested the fruit, you're right. You're right about the trees. But after having harvested the fruit and the fruit got mixed together, so there will be bittul.
The produce is
lost. Yes, correct. Uvavacha lo yiskavein lilakate. But as long as you don't do it intentionally. Rabbi Yossi Amar Afa Miskavin lilakate yalu b'echad ha'masayim. So the Gemara says that, the Braisa concludes by saying that according to Rabbi Yossi, even if intentionally done, there will be bittul. So now, previously, Rabbi Yossi was of the opinion that if I'm trying to create bittul b'mezid, no good. Here, I intentionally created bittul b'mezid, and Rabbi Yossi says, okay, that's fine. So ha'itmar Allah, Amar Rava Chazak in Adam Oster as Kamar Benetia Achas Bechen Ki Aser Rav and Amar Rav Yochanan Chazak in Adam Oster as Kamar Benetia Achas. The Gemara gives the answer twice over, and the answer is that this is so unusual. Meaning, if you have an orchard of trees that are not arla trees, the likelihood of you planting an arla tree in that lot is going to be very unusual and highly irregular. It's a davish and a shchiach. It's something which is just so uncommon, and the chachamim are not going to make a gzera under those circumstances. Okay, let's continue. Hakohanim shepiglo b'mikdash mezidim chayavim. Okay, Kohen does pigle. We discussed this already the other day. Kohen, while doing the avoda and being involved in one of the four critical avodas says, verbalizes. Let's assume that there's a verbal requirement. Although, admittedly, that also is not so straightforward, but let's assume there's a verbal requirement to say it. And he says, I cannot wait to eat the karban outside if it's prescribed time. For example, if it's a shlamim, I can eat a shlamim today and tomorrow. That's it. Tomorrow night, it's no sir. It's too late. Can't eat it. And what's today? Today's Thursday? No, today's Friday. Okay. All day. All right. Correct. So let's say I shech l'shlamim today. I can eat it today. I can eat it tomorrow Shabbos. Already Motzei Shabbos, Sunday, can't eat it. While the Kohen is doing one of the four critical avodas, he says, I'm dying. I cannot wait to eat this on Sunday. Okay. So, HaKohenim shepiglo b'mikdash mezidim chayavim. Now, by creating pigle, they have disqualified the carbon. And so, it's another classic scenario of Hezek Sheino Nikar. It is not discernible. There's no physical difference between the Kohen having shechted the carbon correctly and having shechted the carbon correctly with a machshava pigle. There's no physical difference. And yet, the Mishnah says that if I do a b'mezid, the Kohen is going to be financially liable to reimburse the owner of the carbon with a new carbon. If done b'shogeg, then no. So basically, this mission, the previous mission, are perfectly consistent with one another.
Doesn't he have to carry it out? He has to actually do it on.
Correct.
Sunday.
In order. No. He has to do. He has to finish the four avodas. Meaning, your point is right, but I'm just fine tuning your point. You have to, in order for pigle to materialize, you have to finish the four avodas.
But the thing is, the act of eating on Sunday must.
No,
be carried
that's
out
no. That's not. No. That's not critical. No. Okay, now, Tan Rabbana Hayosa Imo B'Taharos V'Amar Lo Taharos Shasis Imach Nitmu. Let's say a person goes over to his friend and says, you know, I know you had Taharos, I was Metami your Taharos. So, Hayosa Imo B'Zvachim V'Amar Lo Zvachim Shasis Imach Nitz Paglu. And the Kohen says to the owner of the carbon, look, really sorry, I was Mefaglu your carbon. Okay, sorry. So Ava Amar Lo Taharos Shasis Imach Mi Amploni Nitmu V'Zvachim Shasis Imach Mi Amploni Nitz Paglu Eino Neman. However, if he's recounting it as a historical note, you know, a week ago when I shechted your carbon, I was mefagalin, says the Kohen. Or when I handled your Taharos, I did it a week ago, I was metami Taharos. So then he does not have credibility. And so the obvious question is, what's the difference between saying it today versus saying it that this happened a week ago? Maishna Resha, Maishna Seifa, Amar Abai. So Abaye says a fundamental rule, and that is the idea of biado. As long as you still currently have control of the situation, you are also extended credibility. Once you no longer have control of the situation, your credibility is dismissed. This is a principle called biado. Rav Amar Kigon Dashkechu V'lo Amarle V'lo Midi Ula Basar Achi Ashkeche V'Amarle. So and Rava gives a different answer. Now, unclear whether Rava dismisses this principle of Abaye, or maybe he's saying something in addition to Abaye. Certainly from Rashi, it sounds like he's disagreeing with Abaye principally. But either way, Rava says the circumstance in which he's not going to be credible is where this is not the first time he saw you since a week ago. This is now the second time he saw you. First time he saw you, he said nothing. Now he says something. He's just trying to bother you. If it really happened, he would have told you the first time. The fact now that it's the second time just simply means he's just trying to bother you, and it didn't really happen. The Gemara brings in an incident where somebody says to his friend, hey, I was mitami your taharos. Also coming to Rabbi Ami Amarle, Shiras Adin Eino Neman. So, not credible. Simply not credible. I'm a lefana Rabbi Asi, Rabbi Ata Omer Kane, Hachem Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Yosi, Ma Esesha Torah Emino Eminto. So the Gemara quotes the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Look, I'd love to discredit him, but the Torah gives him credibility. Hechan Heminto. Now, what was Rabbi Yochanan making reference to where the Torah gives somebody credibility? I'm Rabbi Yitzchak by Bisni Kohen Gadol by Yom Kippur Miochiach. I'll tell you where the Torah gives credibility. Look at the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. Dechi Amar Pigal Mehemon. Where? If the Kohen, we're talking about the Kohen now on Yom Kippur, where he's the only one in the Kodesh and in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. There is no other Kohen there. Now, if he were to emerge and he would have said, you know, while I was doing the critical Avodah, I also had a Machshavas Pigal. Who's going to know? He's the only one who knows. And yet, He's believed. So the Gemara says there must be that's extended credibility. So this is Rav Yochanan's source of, I don't want to believe him, but the Torah gives him credibility. So the Gemara says, well, maybe we heard. As I mentioned earlier, our Gemara sounds like in order for Pigel to be accomplished, it has to be verbalized. So the Gemara says, well, even if we heard him, that doesn't mean, again, there's no video cameras. We don't know when he said the Machshavas Pigel, he was actually doing the Avoda. It could be that after having done the Avoda, he then verbalized the Machshavas Pigel. So V'dilma D'chazina B'Pishpish. So the Gemara says, well, I said there were no video cameras, but there is a point of vantage where you can see the Kohen. In other words, even from the outside. The Gemara describes some sort of pishpesh, some sort of portal where you could look in. So Kasha, the Gemara says, okay, we don't have definitive proof in the Torah that a person's credible, but Rav Yochanan is of the opinion that a person does have such credibility. Okay, we'll pause over here. Shabbos tomorrow. We pick it up. We'll pick it up. Obviously, we'll pick it up right from here. Finish up this sugya. Okay. Just a quick synopsis. Okay. Finish today the very lengthy sugya in the Gemara of Kenas. Kenas by Mezid. Kenas by Shogeg. Really spent most of our day today ironing out the shitas of Rameir and Rav Yehuda regarding by Dina Daraisa versus Dina Isuri Daraisa versus Isuri Darabanan. When the Chachamim make a Kenas both on Shogeg and on Mezid, just on Mezid, not on Shogeg, and making the consistency of the opinions of Rameir and Rav Yehuda, and then more on the discussion of extending someone credibility when in fact he did a Hezek Sheino Nikar. Is he believed or is he not believed? If he says it on the day that it happened, he's believed. Why should that be? That is a Machlokes Abaye and Rava. Abaye says it's Biyado, it's within his power, therefore he's extended credibility. Once it's historical, it's no longer within his power, he doesn't have credibility. And Rava says, look, if you saw him before and he didn't say anything and now you're seeing him again, he's just doing it to bother you. That's the two basic approaches in terms of what the difference is.